This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents King's Cage by Victoria Aveyard, performed by Amanda Dolan, Adenrele Ojo, and Aaron Spencer. This is Amanda Dolan. Never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world to pursue and achieve your own dreams. HRC. 1. Mayor. I rise to my feet when he lets me. The chain jerks me up, pulling on the thorned collar at my throat. Its points dig in, not enough to draw blood. Not yet. But I'm already bleeding from the wrists. Slow wounds, worn from days of unconscious captivity in rough, ripping manacles. The color stains my white sleeves dark crimson and bright scarlet, fading from old blood to new in a testament to my ordeal. To show Maven's court how much I've suffered already. He stands over me, his expression unreadable. The tips of his father's crown make him seem taller, as if the iron is growing out of his skull. It gleams, each point a curling flame of black metal, shot with bronze and silver. I focus on the bitterly familiar thing, so I don't have to look into Maven's eyes. He draws me in anyway, tugging on another chain I can't see. Only feel. One white hand circles my wounded wrist, somehow gentle. In spite of myself, my eyes snap to his face, unable to stay away. His smile is anything but kind, slim and sharp as a razor, biting at me with every tooth. And his eyes are worst of all. Her eyes. Ilara's eyes. Once I thought them cold, made of living ice. Now I know better. The hottest fires burn blue, and his eyes are no exception. The shadow of the flame. He is certainly ablaze, but darkness eats at his edges. Bruise-like splotches of black and blue surround eyes bloodshot with silver veins. He has not slept. He's thinner than I remember, leaner, crueler. His hair, black as a void, has reached his ears, curling at the ends, and his cheeks are still smooth. Sometimes I forget how young he is, how young we both are. Beneath my shift dress, the M brand on my collarbone stings. Maven turns quickly, my chain tight in his fist, forcing me to move with him, a moon circling a planet. "Bear witness to this prisoner, this victory," he says, squaring his shoulders to the vast audience before us. 300 silvers at least, nobles and civilians, guards and officers. I'm painfully aware of the sentinels on the edge of my vision, their fiery robes a constant reminder of my quickly shrinking cage. My Arvin guards are never out of sight either, their white uniforms blinding, their silencing ability suffocating. I might choke on the pressure of their presence. The king's voice echoes across the opulent stretches of Caesar Square, reverberating through a crowd that responds in kind. There must be microphones and speakers somewhere to carry the king's bitter words throughout the city, and no doubt the rest of the kingdom. "Here is the leader of the Scarlet Guard, Mayor Barrow." In spite of my predicament, I almost snort. Leader. His mother's death has not stemmed his lies. A murderer, a terrorist, a great enemy to our kingdom, and now she kneels before us, there to her blood. The chain jerks again, sending me scuttling forward, arms outstretched to catch my balance. I react dully, eyes downcast. So much pageantry. Anger and shame curl through me as I realize the amount of damage this simple act will do to the Scarlet Guard. Reds across Norta will watch me dance on Maven's strings and think us weak, defeated, unworthy of their attention, effort, or hope. Nothing could be further from the truth. But there isn't anything I can do. Not now, not here, standing on the knife edge of Maven's mercy. I wonder about Corvium, the military city we saw burning on our way to the choke. There was rioting after my broadcast message. Was it the first gasp of revolution, or the last? I have no way of knowing, and I doubt anyone will bother to bring me a newspaper. Cal warned me against the threat of civil war a long time ago, before his father died, before he was left with nothing but a tempestuous lightning girl. Rebellion on both sides, he said. But standing here, leashed before Maven's court and his silver kingdom, I see no division. Even though I showed them, told them of Maven's prison, of their loved ones taken away, of their trust betrayed by a king and his mother, I am still the enemy here. It makes me want to scream, but I know better. Maven's voice will always be louder than mine. Are Mom and Dad watching? The thought of it brings a fresh wave of sorrow, and I bite hard against my lip to keep more tears at bay. I know there are video cameras nearby, focused on my face. Even if I can't feel them anymore, I know. Maven would not miss the opportunity to immortalize my downfall. Are they about to see me die? The caller tells me no. Why bother with this spectacle if he's just going to kill me? Another might feel relieved, but my insides turn cold with fear. He will not kill me. Not Maven. I feel it in his touch. His long, pale fingers still cling to my wrist, while his other hand still holds my leash. Even now, when I am painfully his, he won't let go. I would prefer death to this cage, to the twisted obsession of a mad boy king. I remember his notes, each one ending with the same strange lament. Until we meet again. He continues speaking, but his voice dulls in my head. The whine of a hornet coming too close, making every nerve stand on edge. I look over my shoulder. My eyes drift through the crowd of courtiers behind us. All of them stand proud and vile in their mourning black. Lord Volo of House Samos and his son Ptolemus are splendid in polished ebony armor, with scaled silver sashes from hip to shoulder. At the sight of the latter, I see scarlet, raging red. I fight the urge to lunge and rip the skin from Ptolemus's face, to stab him through his heart the way he did my brother Shade. The desire shows, and he has the spine to smirk at me. If not for the collar and the silent guards restricting everything I am, I would turn his bones to smoking glass. Somehow, his sister, an enemy of so many months ago, isn't looking at me. Evangeline, her gown spiked with black crystal, is ever the glittering star of such a violent constellation. I suppose she'll be queen soon, having suffered her betrothal to Maven long enough. Her gaze is on the king's back, dark eyes fixed with burning focus on the nape of his neck. A breeze picks up, stirring her glossy curtain of silver hair, blowing it back from her shoulders, but she doesn't blink. Only after a long moment does she seem to notice me staring, and even then, her eyes barely flick to mine. They are empty of feeling. I am no longer worthy of her attention. Mayor Barrow is a prisoner of the crown, and she will face the crown and council's judgment. Her many crimes must be answered for. With what? I wonder. The crowd roars in response, cheering his decree. They are silvers, but common, not of noble descent. While they revel in Maven's words, his court does not react. In fact, some of them turn gray, angry, stone-faced. None more so than House Mirandus, their mourning garb slashed with the dark blue of the dead queen's wretched colors. While Evangeline did not notice me, they fix on my face with startling intensity. Eyes of burning blue from every direction, I expect to hear their whispers in my head, a dozen voices burrowing like worms through a rotten apple. Instead, there is only silence. Perhaps the Arvin officers flanking me are not just jailers, but protectors as well, smothering my ability as well as the abilities of anyone who would use them against me. Maven's orders, I assume. No one else may hurt me here. No one but him. But everything hurts already. It hurts to stand, hurts to move, hurts to think. From the jet crash, from the sounder, from the crushing weight of the silencing guards. And those are only physical wounds. Bruises, fractures, pains that will heal if given the time. The same cannot be said of the rest. My brother is dead. I am a prisoner, and I don't know what really happened to my friends however many days ago when I struck this devil's bargain. Cal, Killorn, Cameron, my brothers Bree and Tramie. We left them behind in the clearing, but they were wounded, immobilized, vulnerable. Maven could have sent any number of assassins back to finish what he started. I traded myself for them all, and I don't even know if it worked. Maven would tell me if I asked him. I can see it in his face. His eyes dart to mine after every vile sentence, punctuating every lie performed for his adoring subjects, to make sure I'm watching, paying attention, looking at him, like the child he is. I will not beg him, not here, not like this. I have pride enough for that. My mother and father died fighting these animals, he rails on. They gave their lives to keep this kingdom whole, to keep you safe. Defeated as I am, I can't help but glare at Maven, meeting his fire with a hiss of my own. We both remember his father's death, his murder. Queen Alara whispered her way into Cal's brain, turning the king's beloved heir into a deadly weapon. Maven and I watched as Cal was forced to become his father's killer, cutting off the king's head and any chance Cal had of ruling. I have seen many horrible things since then, and still the memory haunts me. I don't remember much of what happened to the queen outside the walls of Koros prison. The state of her body afterward was testament enough to what unbridled lightning can do to human flesh. I know I killed her without question, without remorse, without regret. My ravaging storm fed by Shade's sudden death. The last clear image I have of the Koros battle is of him falling, his heart pierced by Ptolemus's needle of cold, unforgiving steel. Somehow Ptolemus escaped my blind rage, but the queen did not. At least the colonel and I made sure the world knew what happened to her, displaying her corpse during our broadcast. I wish Maven had some of her ability, so he could look into my head and see exactly what kind of ending I gave his mother. I want him to feel the pain of loss as terribly as I do. His eyes are on me as he finishes his memorized speech, one hand outstretched to better display the chain binding me to him. Everything he does is methodical, performed for an image. I pledge myself to do the same, to end the Scarlet Guard and the monsters like Mare Barrow, or die in the attempt. Die, then. I want to scream. The roar of the crowd drowns out my thoughts. Hundreds cheer on their king and his tyranny. I cry on the walk across the bridge, in the face of so many blaming me for their loved ones' deaths. I can still feel the tears drying on my cheeks. Now I want to weep again, not in sadness, but anger. How can they believe this? How can they stomach these lies? Like a doll, I am turned from the sight. With the last of my strength, I crane my neck over one shoulder, hunting for the cameras, the eyes of the world. See me, I beg. See how he lies. My jaw tightens, my eyes narrow, painting what I pray is a picture of resilience, rebellion, and rage. I am the Lightning Girl. I am a storm. It feels like a lie. The Lightning Girl is dead. But it is the last thing I can do for the cause, and for the people I love still out there. They will not see me stumble in this final moment. No, I will stand. And though I have no idea how, I have to keep fighting, even here in the belly of the beast. Another tug forces me to spin around to face the court. Cold silvers stare back, their skin undertoned by blue and black and purple and gray, leached of life, with veins of steel and diamond rather than blood. They focus not on me, but on Maven himself. In them I find my answer. In them I see hunger. For a split second, I pity the boy king alone on his throne. Then, deep down, I feel the teasing breath of hope. Oh, Maven, what a mess you're in. I can only wonder who will strike first, the Scarlet Guard, or the lords and ladies ready to slit Maven's throat and take everything his mother died for. He hands my leash over to one of the Arvens as soon as we flee the Whitefire steps, retreating into the yawning entrance hall of the palace. Strange. He was so fixated on getting me back, on putting me into his cage, but he tosses my chains away without so much as a glance. Coward, I tell myself. He can't bring himself to look at me when it isn't for spectacle. Did you keep your promise? I demand, breathless. My voice sounds raspy from days of disuse. Are you a man of your word? He doesn't answer. The rest of the court falls in behind us. Their lines and rows are well practiced, based on the complicated intricacies of status and rank. Only I am out of place, the first one to follow the king, walking a few steps behind where a queen should be. I could not be further from the title. I glance at the larger of my jailers, hoping to see something besides blind loyalty in him. He wears a white uniform, thick, bulletproof, zipped tight up his throat. Gloves gleaming, not silk, but plastic. Rubber. I flinch at the sight. Despite their silencing ability, the Arvens won't take any chances with me. Even if I manage to slip a spark past their continuous onslaught, the gloves will protect their hands and allow them to keep me collared, chained, caged. The big Arven doesn't meet my gaze, his eyes focused ahead while his lips purse in concentration. The other is just the same, flanking me in perfect step with his brother or cousin. Their naked scalps gleam, and I'm reminded of Lucas Samos, my kind guard, my friend, who was executed because I existed and because I used him. I was lucky then that Cal gave me such a decent silver to keep me prisoner, and I realize I am lucky now. Indifferent guards will be easier for me to kill. Because they must die. Somehow. Some way. If I am to escape, if I want to reclaim my lightning, they are the first obstacles. The rest are easy to guess. Maven's sentinels, the other guards and officers posted throughout the palace, and of course, Maven himself. I'm not leaving this place unless I leave behind his corpse or mine. I think about killing him, wrapping my chain around his neck and squeezing the life from his body. It helps me ignore the fact that every step takes me deeper into the palace, over white marble, past gilded, soaring walls, beneath a dozen chandeliers with crystal lights carved of flame. As beautiful and cold as I remember. A prison of golden locks and diamond bars. At least I won't have to face its most violent and dangerous warden. The old queen is dead. Still, I shiver at the thought of her. Ilara Mirandis. Her shadow ghosts through my head. Once she tore through my memories. Now she's one of them. An armored figure cuts through my glare, sidling around my guards to plant himself between the king and me. He keeps pace with us, a dogged guardian, even though he doesn't wear the robes or mask of a sentinel. I suppose he knows I'm thinking about strangling Maven. I bite my lip, bracing myself for the sharp sting of a whisper's assault. But no, he is not of House Mirandis. His armor is obsidian dark, his hair silver, his skin moon white. And his eyes, when he looks over his shoulder at me, his eyes are empty and black. Ptolemus. I lunge teeth first, not knowing what I'm doing, not caring, so long as I leave my mark. I wonder if silver blood tastes different from red. I never find out. My collar snaps backward, pulling me so violently my spine arches and I crash to the floor. A bit harder and I would have broken my neck. The crack of marble on skull makes the world spin, but not enough to keep me down. I scramble, my sight narrowing to Ptolemus's armored legs, now turning to face me. Again, I lurch for them, and again the collar pulls me back. "Enough of this," Maven hisses. He stands over me, halting to watch my poor attempts to repay Ptolemus. The rest of the procession has stopped, too, many crowding forward to see the twisted red rat fight in vain. The collar seems to tighten, and I gulp against it, reaching for my throat. Maven keeps his eyes on the metal as it shrinks. Evangeline, I said enough. Despite the pain, I turn to see her at my back, one fist clenched at her side. Like him, she stares at my collar. It pulses as it moves. It must match her heartbeat. Let me loose her, she says, and I wonder if I misheard. Let me loose her right here, dismiss her guards, and I'll kill her, lightning and all. I snarl back at her, every inch the beast they think I am. Try it, I tell her, wishing with all my heart that Maven would agree. Even with my wounds, my days of silence, and my years of inferiority to the Magnetron girl, I want what she offers. I beat her before, I can do it again. It is a chance, at least. A better chance than I could ever hope for. Maven's eyes snap from my collar to his betrothed, his face falling into a tight, searing scowl. I see so much of his mother in him. Are you questioning the orders of your king, Lady Evangeline? Her teeth flash between lips painted purple. Her shroud of courtly manner threatens to fall away, but before she can say something truly damning, her father shifts, just so, his arm brushing her own. His message is clear. Obey. No, she growls, meaning yes. Her neck bends, inclining her head. Your Majesty. The collar releases, widening back to size around my neck. It might even be looser than before. Small blessing that Evangeline is not so meticulous as she strives to appear. Mare Barrow is a prisoner of the Crown, and the Crown will do with her as it sees fit, Maven says, his voice carrying past his volatile bride. His eyes sweep through the rest of the court, making his intentions clear. Death is too good for her. A low murmur ripples through the nobles. I hear tones of opposition, but even more agreement. Strange. I thought all of them would want me executed in the worst way, strung up to feed vultures and bleed away whatever ground the Scarlet Guard has gained. But I suppose they want worse fates for me. Worse fates. That's what John said before. When he saw what my future held, where my path led, he knew this was coming, knew, and told the king. Bought a place at Maven's side with my brother's life and my freedom. I find John standing in the crowd, given a wide berth by the others. His eyes are red, livid, his hair prematurely gray and tied into a neat tail. Another new blood pet for Maven Kalor, but this one wears no chains that I can see. Because he helped Maven stop our mission to save a legion of children before it could even begin. Told Maven our paths and our future. Gift-wrapped me for the boy king. Betrayed us all. John is already staring at me, of course. I don't expect an apology for what he did, and do not receive one.
What about interrogation?
A voice I do not recognize sounds to my left. Still, I know his face. Samson Mirandus, an arena fighter, a savage whisper, a cousin to the dead queen. He shoulders his way toward me, and I can't help but flinch. In another life, I saw him make his arena opponent stab himself to death. Killorn sat by my side and watched, cheering, enjoying the last hours of his freedom. Then, his master died, and our entire world shifted. Our paths changed. And now I sprawl across flawless marble, cold and bleeding, less than a dog at the feet of a king.
Is she too good for interrogation, Your Majesty?
Samson continues, pointing one white hand in my direction. He catches me beneath the chin, forcing me to look up. I fight the urge to bite him. I don't need to give Evangeline another excuse to choke me.
Think of what she's seen, what she knows. She's their leader, and the key to unraveling her wretched kind.
He's wrong. But still, my heartbeat thrums in my chest. I know enough to be of great damage. Tuck flashes before my eyes. as well as the Colonel and the twins from Montfort. The infiltration of the legions, the cities, the whistles across the country, now ferrying refugees to safety, precious secrets carefully kept and soon to be revealed. How many will my knowledge put in danger? How many will die when they crack me open? And that's just military intelligence. Worse still are the dark parts of my own mind, the corners where I keep my worst demons. Maven is one of them, the prince I remembered and loved and wished were real. Then there's Cal, what I've done to keep him, what I've ignored, and what lies I tell myself about his allegiances. My shame and my mistakes eat away, gnawing on my roots. I can't let Samson or Maven see such things inside me. Please, I want to beg. My lips do not move. As much as I hate Maven, as much as I want to see him suffer, I know he's the best chance I have. But pleading for mercy before his strongest allies and worst enemies will only weaken an already weak king. So I keep quiet, trying to ignore Samson's grip on my jaw, focusing only on Maven's face. His eyes find mine for the longest and shortest of moments. "You have your orders," he says brusquely, nodding to my guards. Their grip is firm, but not bruising, as they lift me to my feet, using hands and chains to guide me out of the crowd. I leave them all behind. Evangeline, Ptolemus, Samson, and Maven. He turns on his heel, heading in the opposite direction, toward the only thing he has left to keep him warm. A throne of frozen flames. 2. Mare. I am never alone. The jailers do not leave. Always two, always watching, always keeping when I am silent and suppressed. They don't need anything more than a locked door to make me a prisoner. Not that I can even get close to the door without being manhandled back to the center of my bedchamber. They're stronger than I am, and forever vigilant. My only escape from their eyes is the small bathroom, a chamber of white tile and golden fixings, with a forbidding line of silent stone along the floor. There are enough of the pearly gray slabs to make my head pound and my throat constrict. I have to be quick in there, and make use of every strangling second. The sensation reminds me of Cameron and her ability. She can kill someone with the strength of her silence. As much as I hate my guard's constant vigil, I will not risk suffocating on a bathroom floor for a few extra minutes of peace. Funny, I used to think my greatest fear was being left alone. Now I am anything but, and I've never been more terrified. I have not felt my lightning in 4 days. 5, 6, 17, 31. I notch each day in the baseboard next to the bed, using a fork to dig the passing time. It feels good to leave my mark, to inflict my own small injury on the prison of Whitefire Palace. The Arvins don't mind. They ignore me for the most part, focused only on total and absolute silence. They keep to their places by the door, seated like statues with living eyes. This is not the same room I slept in the last time I was at Whitefire. Obviously, it wouldn't be proper to house a royal prisoner in the same place as a royal bride. But I'm not in a cell, either. My cage is comfortable and well-furnished, with a plush bed, a bookshelf stocked with boring tomes, a few chairs, a table to eat at, even fine curtains, all in neutral shades of gray, brown, and white, leached of color as the Arvins leech power from me. I slowly get used to sleeping alone, but nightmares plague me without Cal to keep them away. Without someone who cares for me, every time I wake up, I touch the earrings dotting my ear, naming each stone. Bree, Tremi, Shade, Killorn. Brothers in blood and bond. Three living, one a ghost. I wish I had an earring to match the one I gave Gisa, so I could have a piece of her too. I dream of her sometimes. Nothing concrete, but flashes of her face, her hair red and dark as spilt blood. Her words haunt me like nothing else. One day people are going to come and take everything you have.
She was right. There are no mirrors, not even in the bathroom, but I know what this place is doing to me. Despite the hearty meals and the lack of exercise, my face feels thinner, my bones cut beneath skin, sharper than ever as I waste. There isn't much more to do than sleep or read one of the volumes on Norton Tax Code, but still, exhaustion set in days ago. Bruises blossom from every touch, and the collar feels hot even though I spend my days cold, shivering. It could be a fever. I could be dying. Not that I have anyone to tell. I barely even speak through the days. The door opens for food and water, for the change in my jailers, and nothing more. I never see a red maid or servant, though they must exist. Instead, the Arvins retrieve meals, linens, and clothes deposited outside, bringing them in for me to use. They clean up as well, grimacing as they perform such a lowly task. I suppose letting a red in my room is too dangerous. The thought makes me smile. So the Scarlet Guard is still a threat, enough to warrant such rigid protocol that even servants aren't allowed near me. But then, it seems no one else is either. No one comes to gawk or gloat over the Lightning Girl. Not even Maven. The Arvins do not talk to me. They don't tell me their names. So, I give them some of my own. Kitten, the older woman smaller than me, with a tiny face and keen sharp eyes. Egg, his head round, white, and bald like the rest of his guardian kin. Trio has three lines tattooed down his neck, like the dragging of perfect claws, and green-eyed Clover, a girl near my age, unwavering in her duties. She is the only one who dares look me in the eye. When I first realized Maven wanted me back, I expected pain, or darkness, or both. Most of all, I expected to see him and endure my torment under his blazing eyes. But I received nothing, not since the day I arrived and was forced to kneel. He told me then he would put my body on display, but no executioners have come. Neither have the Whispers, men like Samson Mirandus and the Dead Queen, to pry my head open and unspool my thoughts. If this is my punishment, it is a boring one. Maven has no imagination. There are still the voices in my head, and so many, too many memories. They cut with a blade's edge. I try to dull the pain with even duller books, but the words swim before my eyes, letters rearranging until all I see are the names of the people I left behind, the living and the dead, and always, everywhere, shade. Ptolemus might have killed my brother, but I was the one to put shade in his path, because I was selfish, thinking myself some kind of savior, because once again I put my trust in someone I shouldn't have, and traded lives as a gambler does playing cards. But you liberated a prison, you freed so many people, and you saved Julian. A weak thought, an even weaker consolation. I know now what the cost of Koros prison was, and every day I come to terms with the fact that if given the choice, I would not pay it again. Not for Julian, not for 100 living Nublens. I wouldn't save any of them with Shade's life. And it was all the same in the end. Maven had asked me to return for months, begging with every blood-stained note. He had hoped to buy me with corpses, with the bodies of the dead. But I'd thought there was no trade I would make, not even for 1,000 innocent lives. Now I wish I'd done as he asked long ago, before he thought to come for the ones I truly care for, knowing I would save them, knowing that Cal, Killorn, my family, they were the only bargain I was willing to make. For their lives, I gave everything. I guess he knows better than to torture me. Even with the Sounder, a machine made to use my lightning against me, to split me apart, nerve by nerve. My agony is useless to him. His mother taught him well. My only comfort is knowing that the young king is without his vicious puppeteer. While I am kept here, watched day and night, he is alone at the head of a kingdom, without Alara Mirandus to guide his hand and protect his back.
It's been a month since I've tasted fresh air, and almost as long since I saw anything but the inside of my room and the narrow view my single window affords. The window looks out over a courtyard garden, well past dead at the end of autumn. Its grove of trees is twisted by green warden hands. In leaf, they must look marvelous. A verdant crown of blossoms with spiraling, impossible branches. But there, the gnarled oaks, elms, and beeches curl into talons, their dry, dead fingers scraping against one another like bones. The courtyard is abandoned, forgotten, just like me. No, I growl to myself. The others will come for me. I dare to hope. My stomach lurches every time the door opens. For a moment, I expect to see Cal, or Kalorn, or Farley, perhaps Nanny, wearing another person's face. The Colonel, even. Now I would weep to see his scarlet eye. But no one comes for me. No one is coming for me. It's cruel to give hope where none should be. And Maven knows it. As the sun sets on the 31st day, I understand what he means to do. He wants me to rot, to fade, to be forgotten. Outside in the courtyard of bones, early snowdrifts and flurries born of an iron-gray sky. The glass is cold to the touch, but it refuses to freeze. So will I. The snow outside is perfect in the morning light, a crust of white gilding bearer trees. It'll melt by afternoon. By my count, it's December 11, a cold, gray, dead time in the echo between autumn and winter. The true snows won't set in until next month. Back home, we used to jump off the porch into snowdrifts, even after Bree broke his leg when he landed on a buried pile of firewood. Cost Geesa a month's wages to get him fixed up, and I had to steal most of the supplies our so-called doctor needed. That was the winter before Bree was conscripted. The last time our entire family was together. The last time. Forever. We'll never be whole again. Mom and Dad are with the guard. Geesa and my living brothers, too. They're safe. They're safe. They're safe. I repeat the words as I do every morning. They are a comfort, even if they might not be true. Slowly I push away my plate of breakfast. The now familiar spread of sugary oatmeal, fruit, and toast holds no comfort for me. Finished, I say out of habit, knowing no one will reply. Kitten is already at my side, sneering at the half-eaten food. She picks up the plate as one would a bug, holding it at arm's length to carry it to the door. I raise my eyes quickly, hoping for a single glimpse of the antechamber outside my room. Like always, it's empty, and my heart sinks. She drops the plate on the floor with a clatter, maybe breaking it, but that's not her concern. Some servant will clean it up. The door shuts behind her, and Kitten returns to her seat. Trio occupies the other chair, his arms crossed, eyes unblinking as he stares at my torso. I can feel his ability in hers. They feel like a blanket wrapped too tight, keeping my lightning pinned and hidden, far away in a place where I cannot even begin to go. It makes me want to tear my skin off. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. Smash. I throw my water glass against the opposite wall, letting it splatter and splinter against horrible gray paint. Neither of my guards flinches. I do this a lot. And it helps. For a minute, maybe. I follow the usual schedule, the one I've developed over the last month of captivity. Wake up, immediately regret it, receive breakfast, lose appetite, have food taken away, immediately regret it, throw water, immediately regret it, strip bed linens, maybe rip up the sheets, sometimes while shouting, immediately regret it. Attempt to read a book, stare out window, stare out window, stare out window. Receive lunch, repeat. I'm a very busy girl, or I guess I should say woman. 18 is the arbitrary divide between child and adult, and I turned 18 weeks ago, November 17. not that anyone knew or noticed. I doubt the Arvins care that their charge is another year older. Only one person in this prison palace would. And he did not visit, to my relief. It's the single blessing to my captivity. While I am held here, surrounded by the worst people I'll ever know, I don't have to suffer his presence. Until today. The utter silence around me shatters. Not with an explosion, but with a click. The familiar turn of the door lock. Off schedule, without warrant. My head snaps to the sound, as do the Arvins, their concentration breaking in surprise. Adrenaline bleeds into my veins, driven by my suddenly thrumming heart. In the split second, I dare to hope again. I dream of who could be on the other side of the door. My brothers. Farley. Killorn. Cal. I want it to be Cal. I want his fire to consume this place and all these people whole. But the man standing on the other side is no one I recognize. Only his clothes are familiar. Black uniform, silver detailing. A security officer, nameless and unimportant. He steps into my prison, holding the door open with his back. More of his light gather outside the doorway, darkening the antechamber with their presence. The Arvins jump to their feet, just as surprised as I am.
"What are you doing?"
Trio sneers. It's the first time I've ever heard his voice. Kitten does as she is trained to do, stepping between me and the officer. Another burst of silence knocks into me, fed by her fear and confusion. It crashes like a wave, eating at the little bits of strength I still have left. I stay rooted in my chair, loath to fall down in front of other people. The security officer says nothing, staring at the floor, waiting. She enters in reply, in a gown made of needles. Her silver hair has been combed and braided with gems, in the fashion of the crown she hungers to wear. I shudder at the sight of her, perfect and cold and sharp, a queen in bearing if not yet title, because she's still not a queen, I can tell. "Evangeline," I murmur, trying to hide the tremors in my voice, both from fear and disuse. Her black eyes pass over me with all the tenderness of a cracking whip. Head to toe and back again, noting every imperfection, every weakness. I know there are many. Finally, her gaze lands on my collar, taking in the pointed metal edges. Her lip curls in disgust, and also hunger. How easy it would be for her to squeeze, to drive the points of the collar into my throat and bleed me bone dry.
"Lady Samos, you are not permitted to be here,"
Kitten says, still standing between us. I'm surprised by her boldness. Evangeline's eyes flicker to my guard, her sneer spreading.
"You think I would disobey the king, my betrothed?"
She forces a cold laugh.
"I'm here on his orders. He commands the presence of the prisoner at court. Now."
Each word stings. A month of imprisonment suddenly seems far too short. Part of me wants to grab onto the table and force Evangeline to drag me out of my cage. But even isolation has not broken my pride. Not yet. Not ever, I remind myself. So I stand on weak limbs, joints aching, hands quivering. A month ago I attacked Evangeline's brother with little more than my teeth. I tried to summon as much of that fire as I can, if only to stand up straight. Kitten keeps her ground, unmoving. Her head tips to Trio, locking eyes with her cousin.
"We had no word. This is not protocol."
Again, Evangeline laughs, showing white, gleaming teeth. Her smile is beautiful and violent as a blade.
"Are you refusing me, Guard Arvin?"
As she speaks, her hands wander to her dress, running perfect white skin through the forest of needles. Bits of it stick to her like a magnet, and she comes away with a handful of spikes. She palms the clinging slivers of metal, patient, waiting, one eyebrow raised. The Arvins know better than to extend their crushing silence to a Samos daughter, let alone the future queen. The pair of them exchange wordless glances, clearly coming down on either side of Evangeline's question. Trio furrows his brow, glaring, and finally Kitten sighs aloud. She steps away. She backs down.
A choice I'll not forget,
Evangeline murmurs. I feel exposed before her, alone in front of her piercing eyes, despite the other guards and officers looking on. Evangeline knows me, knows what I am, what I can do. I almost killed her in the bowl of bones, but she ran, afraid of me and my lightning. She is certainly not afraid now. Deliberate, I take a step forward, toward her, toward the blissful emptiness that surrounds her, allowing her ability. Another step. Into the free air, into electricity. Will I feel it immediately? Will it come rushing back? It must, it has to. But her sneer bleeds into a smile. She matches my pace, moving back, and I almost snarl. Not so fast, Barrow. It's the first time she's ever said my real name. She snaps her fingers, pointing at Kitten. Bring her along. They drag me like they did the first day I arrived, chained at the collar, my leash tightly grasped in Kitten's fist. Her silence and trios continue, beating like a drum in my skull. The long walk through Whitefire feels like sprinting miles, though we move at an easy pace. As before, I am not blindfolded. They don't bother to try to confuse me. I recognize more and more as we get closer to our destination, cutting down passages and galleries I explored freely a lifetime ago. Back then, I didn't feel the need to sort them. Now, I do my best to map the palace in my head. I'll certainly need to know its layout if I ever plan to get out of here alive. My bedchamber faces east, and it is on the fifth floor. That much I know from counting windows. I remember Whitefire is shaped like interlocking squares, with each wing surrounding a courtyard like the one my room looks out on. The view out the tall, arched windows changes with every new passageway. A courtyard garden, Caesar's Square, the long stretches of the training yard where Cal drilled with his soldiers, the distant walls and the rebuilt Bridge of Archeon beyond. Thankfully, we never passed through the residencies where I found Julian's journal, where I watched Cal rage and Maven quietly scheme. I'm surprised by how many memories the rest of the palace holds, despite my short time here. We pass a block of windows on a landing, looking west across the barracks to the Capitol River, and the other half of the city beyond it. The bowl of bones nestles among the buildings, its hulking form too familiar. I know this view. I stood in front of these windows with Cal. I lied to him, knowing an attack would come that night. But I didn't know what it would do to either of us. Cal whispered then that he wished things were different. I share the lament. Cameras must follow our progress, though I can no longer feel them. Evangeline says nothing as we descend to the main floor of the palace, with her officers in tow, a flocking troop of blackbirds around a metal swan. Music echoes from somewhere. It pulses, like a swollen and heavy heart. I've never heard such music before, not even at the ball I attended or during Cal's dancing lessons. It has a life of its own, something dark and twisting and oddly inviting. Ahead of me, Evangeline's shoulders stiffen at the sound. The court level is oddly empty, with only a few guards posted along the passages. Guards, not sentinels, who will be with Maven. Evangeline doesn't turn right, as I expect, to enter the throne room through the grand arching doors. Instead, she surges forward, all of us in tow, pushing into another room I know all too well. The council chamber. A perfect circle of marble and polished gleaming wood. Seats ring the walls, and the seal of Norta, the burning crown, dominates the ornate floor. Red and black and royal silver, with points of bursting flame. I almost stumble at the sight of it, and I have to shut my eyes. Kitten will pull me through the room. I have no doubt of that. I'll gladly let her drag me if it means I don't have to see any more of this place. Walsh died here, I remember. Her face flashes behind my eyelids. She was hunted down like a rabbit, and it was wolves that caught her. Evangeline, Ptolemus, Cal. They captured her in the tunnels beneath Archeon, following her orders from the Scarlet Guard. They found her, dragged her here, and presented her to Queen Alara for interrogation. It never got that far, because Walsh killed herself. She swallowed a murderous pill in front of us all, to protect the secrets of the Scarlet Guard. To protect me. When the music triples in volume, I open my eyes again. The council chamber is gone, but the sight before me is somehow worse. 3. Mare. Music dances on the air, undercut with the sweet and sickening bite of alcohol as it permeates every inch of the magnificent throne room. We step out onto a landing elevated a few feet above the chamber floor, allowing a grand view of the ruckus party, and a few moments before anyone realizes we're here. My eyes dart back and forth, on edge, on defense, searching every face and every shadow for opportunity or danger. Silk and gemstones and beautiful armor wink beneath the light of a dozen chandeliers, creating a human constellation that surges and twists on the marble floor. After a month of imprisonment, the sight is an assault on my senses. But I gulp it in, a girl starved. So many colors, so many voices, so many familiar lords and ladies. For now they take no notice of me. Their eyes do not follow. Their focus is on one another, their cups of wine and multicolored liquor, the harried rhythm, the fragrant smoke curling through the air. This must be a celebration. A wild one, but for what, I have no idea. Naturally, my mind flies. Have they won another victory? Against Cal, against the Scarlet Guard? Or are they still cheering my capture? One look at Evangeline is answer enough. I've never seen her scowl this way, not even at me. Her cat-like sneer turns ugly, angry, full of rage like I can't imagine. Her eyes darken, shifting over the display. They are black like a void, swallowing up the sight of her people in a state of ultimate bliss. Or, I realize, ignorance. At someone's command, a flurry of red servants push off the far wall and move through the chamber in practiced formation. They carry trays of crystal goblets with liquid-like ruby, gold, and diamond starlight. By the time they reach the opposite side of the crowd, their trays are empty and quickly refilled. Another pass, and the trays empty again. How some of the silvers are still standing, I have no idea. They continue in their revelry, talking or dancing with hands clawed around their glasses. A few puff on intricate pipes, blowing oddly colored smoke into the air. It doesn't smell like tobacco, which many of the elders in the stilts jealously hoard. I watch sparks in their pipes with envy, each one a pinprick of light. Worse is the sight of the servants. The reds. They make me ache. What I would give to take their place, to be only a servant instead of a prisoner? Stupid, I scold myself. They are imprisoned same as you, just like all of your kind. Trapped beneath a silver boot, though some have more room to breathe. Because of him. Evangeline descends from the landing, and the Arvins force me to follow. The stairs lead us directly to the dais, another elevated platform high enough to denote its ultimate importance. And of course, a dozen sentinels stand upon it, masked and armed, terrifying in every inch. I expect the thrones I remember. Diamond glass flames for the king's seat, sapphire and polished white gold for the queen's. Instead, Maven sits upon the same kind of throne I saw him rise from a month ago, when he held me chained in front of the world. No gems, no precious metals, just slabs of gray stone swirled with something shiny, flat-edged, and brutally absent of insignia. It looks cold to the touch and uncomfortable, not to mention terribly heavy. It dwarfs him, making him seem younger and smaller than ever. To look powerful is to be powerful, a lesson I learned from Ilara, though somehow Maven didn't. He seems the boy he is, sharply pale against his black uniform, the only color on him the blood-red lining of his cape, a silver riot of metals, and the shivering blue of his eyes. King Maven of House Kalor meets my gaze the moment he knows I'm here. The instant hangs, suspended on a thread of time. A canyon of distractions yawns between us, filled with so much noise and graceful chaos, but the room might as well be empty. I wonder if he notices the difference in me. the sickness, the pain, the torture my quiet prison has put me through. He must. His eyes slide over my pronounced cheekbones to my collar, down to the white shift they dress me in. I'm not bleeding this time, but I wish I were. To show everyone what I am, what I've always been. Red, wounded, but alive. As I did before the court, before Evangeline a few minutes ago, I straighten my spine and stare with all the strength and accusation I have to give. I take him in, looking for the cracks only I can see. Shadowed eyes, twitching hands, posture so rigid his spine might shatter. You are a murderer, Maven Kalor. A coward. A weakness. It works. He tears his eyes away from me and springs to his feet, both hands still gripping the arms of his throne. His rage falls like the blow from a hammer. Explain yourself, Guard Arvin! He erupts at my closest jailer. Trio jumps in his boots. The outburst stops the music, the dancing, and the drinking in the span of a heartbeat.
Sir!
Trio sputters, and one of his gloved hands grips my arm. It bleeds silence, enough to make my heartbeat slow. He tries to find an explanation that doesn't place blame on himself or the future queen, but comes up short. My chain trembles in Kitten's hand, but her grip is still tight. Only Evangeline is unaffected by the king's wrath. She expected this response. He didn't order her to bring me. There was no summons at all. Maven is not a fool. He waves a hand at Trio, ending his mumbling with a single motion. Your feeble attempt is answer enough, he says. What do you have to say for yourself, Evangeline? In the crowd, her father stands tall, watching with wide, stern eyes. Another might call him afraid, but I don't think Volo Samos has the power to feel emotion. He simply strokes his pointed silver beard, his expression unreadable. Ptolemus is not so gifted at hiding his thoughts. He stands on the dais with the sentinels, the only one without fiery robes or a mask. Though his body is still, his eyes dart between the king and his sister, and one fist clenches slowly. Good. Fear for her as I feared for my brother. Watch her suffer as I watched him die. Because what else can Maven do now? Evangeline has deliberately disobeyed his orders, leaping past the allowances their betrothal allows. If I know anything, I know that to cross the king is to be punished, and to do it here in front of the entire court, he might just execute her on the spot. If Evangeline thinks she's risking death, she doesn't show it. Her voice never cracks or wavers. You ordered the terrorist to be imprisoned, shut away like a useless bottle of wine, and after a month of council deliberation, there has been no agreement on what is to be done with her. Her crimes are many worthy of a dozen deaths, a thousand lifetimes in our worst jails. She killed or maimed hundreds of your subjects since she was discovered, your own parents included, and still she rests in a comfortable bedchamber, eating, breathing, alive, without the punishment she deserves. Maven is his mother's son, and his court facade is nearly perfect. Evangeline's words don't seem to bother him in the slightest. The punishment she deserves, he repeats. Then he looks to the room, one corner of his chin raised. So you brought her here? Really? Are my parties that bad? A thrum of laughter, both genuine and forced, ripples through the rapt crowd. Most of them are drunk, but there are enough clear heads to know what's going on, what Evangeline has done. Evangeline pulls a courtly smile that looks so painful, I expect her lips to start bleeding at the corners. I know you are grieving for your mother, Your Majesty, she says without a hint of sympathy. As we all are, but your father would not act this way. The time for tears is over. Those last are not her words, but the words of Tiberius the Sixth, Maven's father, Maven's ghost. His mask threatens to slip for a moment, and his eyes flash with equal parts dread and anger. I remember those words as well as he does, spoken before a crowd just like this. In the wake of the Scarlet Guard's execution of political targets, targets chosen by Maven, fed to him by his mother. We did their dirty work, while they added to the body count with an atrocious attack of their own. They used me,
use the guard to eliminate some of their enemies and demonize others in one fell swoop. They destroyed more, killed more than any of us ever wanted. I can still smell the blood and smoke. I can still hear a mother weeping over her dead children.